Okay, so let's dive into the DSM-5 and look at the various depressive diagnoses and their diagnostic criteria. Depression is a mood state characterized by a significantly low mood and loss of interest or pleasure in activities that were previously considered enjoyable. Having a depressed mood some of the time is within the normal range of human experience. However, when this low mood state affects the quality and engagement in life and continues for more than a couple of weeks, it may meet diagnostic criteria for major depression or another depressive disorder. According to the ABS, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the proportion of people diagnosed with a depressive disorder in their lifetime is 15%, including 11.6% with a depressive episode and 1.9% with persistent depressive disorder, which was previously known as dysthymia. Depression, as we've seen earlier, is a remarkably common experience. So let's look now at the psychological, the physical, and the behavioral symptoms of depression. Some of the psychological symptoms of depression include sadness, feeling worthless, feeling helpless, feeling hopeless, guilt, thoughts of death, and negative thoughts such as I'm not good enough or I'm unlovable. Some of the physical symptoms of depression include difficulty sleeping, feeling tired, weight loss or weight gain, and a change in appetite. And some of the behavioral symptoms of depression include lacking motivation, not wanting to go out, not wanting to engage in enjoyable activities anymore, frequent crying, and difficulty concentrating. So here's a snippet from The Ellen Show with Sarah Silverman talking about her experience of depression.
And when you say you dealt with depression, did it get pretty bad for you?
Yeah, it was, you know, I was very young when the first time it hit me and I didn't know what was happening. It was like my perspective shifted about 2 or 3 degrees one way, and everything looked different. I was a really social kid, I was a class clown, and suddenly I didn't see any reason to be with people. I would watch my friends at school just existing carefree, you know, and I'd be so jealous that they're just so unaware that we're all alone and gonna die and alone behind our eyes. And I remember my stepfather asking me what it felt like, and I feel like this is a perfect way to describe it. It feels like homesickness. It feels like you're terribly homesick, but you're home, so there's no way to satiate it.
Wow, that's amazing. And how long have you been fine now, or do you still get bouts of that?
In remission, in depression remission?
Yeah.
I have bouts of it. I'm on a low dose of Zoloft since 1994. That's really kept me from the total paralysis of depression, you know. I still have highs and lows, and but I'm able to function. I still have lows. I still am like in a ball on my bathroom floor every once in a while, and but I know now that it will pass. So,
Yeah.
and sometimes that's all it takes, you
Yeah.
know.
I really like her description in this of depression as homesickness, but you're already home, so there's no way to satiate it. But really, so many of us are not at home with ourselves, so it's no wonder that depression feels like homesickness. I feel like yoga is a practice that helps us to come home to ourself, and that's why it can be so wonderful for people experiencing depression. All right, so we've looked at Sarah Silverman's description of depression. Let's look at the DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for depression. So we're going to look at major depression, persistent depressive disorder, and premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So let's start with major depression. All right, so this is the DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for major depression. This is when it gets pretty heavy, okay? So the first three parts, this is part of part A. The first three parts, part A, B, and C, relate to a depressive episode. So we're going to go through this now. So A is 5 or more of the following symptoms have been present during the same 2-week period and represent a change from previous functioning. And at least one of the symptoms is either number 1, which is a depressed mood, or number 2, which is a loss of interest or pleasure. Okay, so 5 of the following. Let's go through them all. 1 is a depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day, as indicated by either subjective report, so they say they feel sad or feel empty or feel hopeless, or observation made by others. So you can see somebody's crying, for example. Number 2, markedly diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all activities most of the day, nearly every day. So this is, you know, I see this in my counseling room. People will come in and will say, you know, I used to love walking on the beach or going to a yoga class or hanging out with my friends, but now, you know, it just, you know, I couldn't be bothered and it's not fun anymore. Number 3, significant weight loss when not dieting, or weight gain, or a decrease or increase in appetite nearly every day. 4, insomnia or hypersomnia nearly every day. So insomnia we know about, right? This is when we have difficulty sleeping. So we're having trouble getting to sleep at night, or we're waking in the middle of the night around that 2-3 a.m. usually time slot and lying awake, or waking up too early and not being able to get back to sleep. So, I mean, that's insomnia, and that is commonly what I see in my practice, but hypersomnia also shows up as well sometimes, although it, you know, in my experience, it's not as common. So hypersomnia is when you're sleeping too much. So this might be you go to bed really early because you're tired at the end of the day, like 8 o'clock, for example, or 9 o'clock, and then you sleep and sleep and sleep and might not get out of bed till 11 o'clock the next day. Number 5, psychomotor agitation or retardation nearly every day. So this is moving really quickly or moving really, really slowly. It needs to be observable by others, not merely subjective feelings of restlessness or being slowed down. So it needs to be noticeable by other people. Number 6, fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day. Number 7, feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt nearly every day. Number 8, diminished ability to think or concentrate or indecisiveness nearly every day. And then number 9, recurrent thoughts of death, not just fear of dying, recurrent suicide ideation without a specific plan. So that's thinking about suicide, thinking about taking your life but not having a plan. Or a suicide attempt or a specific plan for committing suicide. And then we've got B. So B is the symptoms cause clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. So this is an important one. This says you only meet diagnostic criteria for major depression if it's causing some kind of distress or impairment. If it's not causing distress or impairment, then it's not a problem. It doesn't meet diagnostic criteria. And C, the episode is not attributable to the physiological effects of a substance or to another medical condition. And there's a little note here as well. Responses to a significant loss, e.g. bereavement, financial ruin, losses from a natural disaster, a serious medical illness or disability, may include the feelings of intense sadness, rumination about the loss, insomnia, poor appetite, and weight loss noted in criterion A, which may resemble a depressive episode. Although such symptoms may be understandable or considered appropriate to the loss, the presence of a major depressive episode in addition to the normal response to a significant loss should also be carefully considered. This decision inevitably requires the exercise of clinical judgment based on the individual's history and the cultural norms for the expression of distress in the context of loss. And then we have D. The occurrence of the major depressive episode is not better explained by another disorder like schizoaffective disorder, schizophrenia, schizophreniform disorder, delusional disorder, or other specified and unspecified schizophrenia spectrum and other psychotic disorders. And then E, there has never been a manic episode or a hypomanic episode. In that case, we'd be looking at bipolar disorder. All right, so let's move on to the DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for persistent depressive disorder. In the previous DSM, this was called dysthymia. So you might have heard it called dysthymia. That's what I knew it as for a long time. It is now called persistent depressive disorder. So to meet diagnostic criteria for persistent depressive disorder, it's quite a mouthful, isn't it? You'll need A, depressed mood for most of the day for more days than not, as indicated by either subjective account or observation by others for at least 2 years. So you can see the difference here between major depressive disorder, that's in a 2 week period, and often major depressive disorder is quite intense. It's like a really deep dark hole for a shorter period of time, although it can go on for a long period of time as well. Whereas persistent depressive disorder is kind of a low grade depression that goes on for a long period of time. It needs to have gone on for at least 2 years to get a diagnosis of depression, of persistent depressive disorder. So that was A. B, presence while depressed of two or more of the following. So we need at least two of these. One is poor appetite or overeating. Two is insomnia or hypersomnia. Three is low energy or fatigue. Four is low self-esteem. Five is poor concentration or difficulty making decisions. And six is feelings of hopelessness. So to meet diagnostic criteria, you need to have at least two of those. C, during the 2 year period of disturbance, the individual has never been without the symptoms in criteria A and B for more than 2 months at a time. So it needs to be pretty constant. D, criteria for a major depressive disorder may be continuously present for 2 years. So they can be going on at the same time. E, there has never been a manic episode or hypomanic episode, and criteria have never been met for cyclothymic disorder. F, the disturbance is not better explained by another disorder. G, the symptoms are not attributable to the physiological effects of a substance like drug abuse or medication or another medical condition like hypothyroidism. H, the symptoms cause clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. So here we have it again, this idea that it only meets diagnostic criteria if it's a problem, if it's causing distress or impairment in various areas of your life. Now let's turn to premenstrual dysphoric disorder. This disorder is new in the DSM-5. It wasn't in the previous ones. And I share it with you here just because, I don't know, I think it's interesting what's included in the DSM. So let's take a look at A. In the majority of menstrual cycles, at least five symptoms must be present in the final week before the onset of menses, start to improve within the few days after the onset of menses, and become minimal or absent in the week post-menses. B, one or more of the following symptoms must be present. One, marked affective lability. So we're talking about mood swings here. E.g. mood swings, feeling suddenly sad or tearful, or increased sensitivity to rejection. Two, marked irritability or anger or increased interpersonal conflicts. Three, marked depressed mood, feelings of hopelessness or self-deprecating thoughts. Four, marked anxiety, tension and or feelings of being keyed up or on edge. C, one or more of the following symptoms must additionally be present to reach a total of five symptoms when combined with symptoms from criterion B. Number one, decreased interest in usual activities, for example, work, school, friends, and hobbies. Two, subjective difficulty in concentration. Three, lethargy, is easily fatigued or marked lack of energy. Four, marked change in appetite, overeating, or specific food cravings. Five, hypersomnia or insomnia. 6, a sense of being overwhelmed or out of control. 7, physical symptoms such as breast tenderness or swelling, joint or muscle pain, a sensation of bloating or weight gain. And then there's a note here at the bottom. The symptoms in criteria A to C must have been met for most menstrual cycles that occurred in the preceding year. And then we look at D. The symptoms are associated with clinically significant distress or interference with work, school, usual social activities, or relationships with others. For example, avoidance of social activities, decreased productivity and efficiency at work, school, at home. Again, so this is not just the presence of the symptoms that were mentioned earlier, but they must be associated with clinically significant distress or interference. Interesting how you would, what interference would mean. Okay, E. The disturbance is not merely an exacerbation of the symptoms of another disorder, such as major depressive disorder, panic disorder, persistent depressive disorder, or a personality disorder, although it may co-occur with any of these disorders. F, criterion A should be confirmed by prospective daily ratings during at least 2 symptomatic cycles. And G, the symptoms are not attributable to the physiological effects of a substance like drug abuse, medication, or other treatment, or another medical condition like hypothyroidism. Interesting, right? So there are other depressive diagnoses in the DSM, and these include disruptive mood dysregulation disorder, substance medication-induced depressive disorder, depressive disorder due to another medical condition, and other specified depressive disorder. That's what they use when someone's depressed, but the symptoms don't fit nicely into one of the other categories. So I'm not going to go into detail with these other diagnoses. I wanted to share the main ones with you, the ones that I see showing up in my practice the most, the ones that you might hear when they come, when students come and say, you know, I've been given a diagnosis of major depressive disorder or whatever it is. So you have an understanding of what these diagnoses actually mean. Okay, so as a yoga teacher, it is outside your scope of practice to diagnose depression 100%. However, a student might tell you that they've been experiencing depression, or they might exhibit some of the following indicators. So they might be sad in class or have a tamasic energy. We're going to look more at tamas later on in the course. They might suddenly stop coming to class, or they might just come to one class and never come back. Their body language might be hunched over with stooped shoulders and a collapsed chest. They might sigh heavily. Or it also might look like they're barely breathing. They might be drawn to shavasana or other restorative postures. They might feel like they're not good enough and communicate this through their body language or the way that they speak to themselves or to others. They might be lacking motivation. They might give up easily in challenging postures. You might see them crying in class. They may report feeling exhausted or report or look overwhelmed in class. They might not interact with other students, might be feeling disheartened and hopeless if they don't get the poses right. They might not follow your instructions or get easily confused when you're leading a class. They may have poor body image. They may be moving or speaking slowly, running late for class. That's one that I see quite a bit. Or they might be hiding at the back of the class. So it's important to note that presenting with just one or two of these indicators does not mean that your student is depressed, nor if they don't exhibit any of these, it doesn't mean that they're not depressed. This list is merely intended to give you an idea of how depression might show up in your yoga class, how you might spot it, how you might understand that somebody might be experiencing depression in your class. Okay, so that's us for this lecture on depression. I look forward to seeing you over in the next lecture.